Hey, it's Elliot. Before we get going, we wanted to let you know that Sportsnet's weekly NHL newsletter is coming to your inbox this season. Written and produced by Rory Boylan, our NHL editor and co-host of the Tape to Tape podcast, Sportsnet's NHL newsletter will deliver original content you can't find anywhere else, plus all the most important news, analysis, and videos of the week. Sign up now at sportsnet.ca/newsletters. That's sportsnet.ca/newsletters to get the most in-depth, exclusive hockey coverage delivered directly to your inbox. I don't even know if I'm doing this right.
Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra trucks. Elliot, this week, a little bit different of a podcast. Last week, we were in St. John, New Brunswick. The St. John Sea Dogs, a QMJHL squad, celebrating their 15th anniversary. This is an organization that has won three President's Cups. This is an organization that's won the Memorial Cup. This is an organization that will be good this year, and then probably, as you know, the cycles of junior hockey, great for at least one, maybe two more seasons. It is one of the more wildly successful junior hockey franchises in all the CHL. And this one came together in kind of a unique way. And it all started with a casual conversation that I had with team president and general manager Trevor Georgie, who is a big fan of the podcast and listens and just sort of threw out there, hey, it's our 15th anniversary. This is back in the late spring, early summer. It's our 15th anniversary next season. Would you and Elliot be interested in doing something around it, doing a podcast, coming to talk to the kids, just doing something as we want to make this a big event in the city of St. John? It was easy to get you aboard. It was easy to get Amel aboard. It took a little while over the summer, but we were able to put it together. So last week we ended up in St. John. Spent a wonderful afternoon with Trevor out for lunch. And I think, was this the first time you had met Trevor?
Yes.
Georgie?
Yes.
What were your impressions? What did you think of Trevor? Because in a lot of corners, like he's like that next new school general manager around hockey.
He paid for lunch, so I liked him a great deal. No, he seemed like a really easygoing, friendly guy. And the one thing that you always wonder is, and anybody can appreciate this, whenever you're invited to go somewhere, and I'm not talking about us, I'm talking about anybody out there, you're always seeing, is this organized? Does everything happen as you would expect it? Is it someone who looks like they're flying by the seat of the pants, or is it, this is arranged, this happens, this gets done? From the moment we landed in St. John, Renata picked us up, you could tell that they had organized everything beautifully. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks very well of his and his organization's ability to handle things. You know, you never know what to expect when you go on things like this. For me personally, this was a great way to start the year. It was different. It was unexpected. I wasn't expecting to do this. So it was a bit of a surprise turn. And just to go somewhere where I've never been, I'd never been to St. John, New Brunswick before, spend the afternoon walking around, meet the coaches, meet the kids, walk around the arena, then do the event later at night, get a chance to meet some of their fans, and a couple of their billets were there. It was just a nice day. It left me with, I was like, this is a great way to prepare for the year, something fresh, different, just charge your mind. So what I'm telling all the junior teams out there is, we can be bought, and I would love to do this again, but St. John has set a very high standard. I really enjoyed it.
That is a high bar. Trevor's crew is fantastic, and listen, a lot of that is top-down. That goes right to the owner, Scotty McCain, who spares no expense when it comes to his junior hockey franchise. So you will hear from president and general manager of the St. John Sea Dogs, Trevor Georgie. You'll hear from Jeremy Poirier. That is a name you will hear all season long. He'll be a first-round draft pick in the NHL draft coming up in Montreal in June. You'll also hear from Jonathan Huberdeau. This was part of our Star Series from Chicago. So we spent a couple of minutes as part of our interview with Huberdeau talking about the St. John Sea Dogs and his background there. So that's coming up here on the podcast. In the meantime, let's take you now. This is our live show last week at Rockies, which is a really cool place, really cool place right next to the rink. So pre-game, post-game, this is where St. John Sea Dogs fans go. This is 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra trucks, live from Rockies in St. John, New Brunswick.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to St. John. The local time is 15 minutes after 11. may now use your cell phones if you wish. We do, however, require that you remain in your seats with your seatbelt fastened and your carry-on luggage stowed until we come to a final stop in front of the terminal building. This is the termination of your flight with us today. Please take a look around to ensure that you have all personal belongings in your possession before leaving the aircraft. Put your phone down, sir.
Okay, the music stopped, so I suppose it's probably time to begin. Welcome to Rockies. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. I'm Jeff Merrick alongside Elliot Friedman, star of stage and screen and Hockey Night in Canada, and the best hockey blog you'll read anywhere, 31 Thoughts, and this podcast dovetails with that piece. Thanks to everyone at Rockies for having us here today. Thanks to everyone in St. John. I've been here a number of times. Elliot, this is your maiden voyage. We're going to talk to Trevor Georgie here in a couple of seconds. Jeremy Poirier of the St. John Sea Dogs will drop by as well. But this is the first time you have come to the first, I got to get this right, the first incorporated city in Canada, and the place where the first sidewalk was ever laid in Canada, St. John, New Brunswick. Initial takeaway, Elliot, you've been here now for about 12 hours.
What's not to like? I got my steps in today. I try to hit 10,000 a day so I can fit into this suit a little bit better. Great walking city, well over 10,000. What's not to like? And this New Brunswick was the last province I had to visit in the country to be at every one, so I'm glad I finally got here.
All right, round of applause for Elliot. Now he's hit all of them. Enjoying himself in St. John's season opener Friday against Halifax, and then it is the intense rivals on Saturday, as Trevor Georgie nods approvingly. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. We want to thank everybody for coming down here to Rockies. It's a real treat when we get to get outside of the studio. Frank Zappa used to always call it Studio Tan. I'm sick of just looking at Elliot when we do this thing. I've known Elliot for far too long, and I've looked at him for just far too long, so it's much nicer to look outward at you lovely people here from St. John. And speaking of lovely people, we spent the better part of 2-3 hours this afternoon just having a sort of informal hot stove chat with this year's edition of the St. John Sea Dogs. And I am always impressed with a couple of things about young hockey players now. One, how thoughtful they are, how lean they are, how talented they are. We were joking afterwards, where did all the bad skaters go in hockey? And just how curious they are about hockey in general. Asked some thoughtful questions, gave some really thoughtful answers. This is a big season for St. John. 10 draft eligible players. So Montreal is going to be populated by Sea Dogs come June. And I'm curious what your thought was, because you're basically, you do a lot of NHL. You don't have the luxury of getting out to a lot of the junior hockey locales.
True.
Having said that, you did come to one of the Cadillacs here, maybe the Cadillac of all junior hockey franchises. What did you make of the kids today for each?
You know, there's one thing I completely agree with. Like, I don't know how old everybody is in here. I'm 10 days away from turning 49. And I look at these kids now from the ages of 16 to 20, and I remember what I was like at age 16 to 20. And these kids now, they're so much smarter and so much worldly compared to the way I was back then. Like, I was a total cement head at that age compared to these kids. I don't know if it's social media. I don't know if it's the connectivity of everything. I don't know if they have people around them, whether it's their parents or their support staff or the Sea Dogs, the organization themselves. But these kids are so much more prepared for real life than I was at that age. Like, I went away at university. I was 3 weeks away before I turned 19. I was miles behind the way these kids are now. I am blown away by that. Maybe you guys were a lot smarter than me when you were in your teens, but I look at these kids now and I am blown away by how prepared they are for the world. I wasn't even close.
Going to bring Trevor Georgie up here in a couple of moments. In the meantime, we talk about, you know, young hockey players and making that transition from the CHL to the NHL, and you look at a lot of successful teams around the league, and we've always made the point that if you're going to be successful at the highest end of the NHL, you need to have young hockey players who are on their entry-level deals. And a cynic might look at that and say, well, you need to have some cheap hockey players in there that are on the quote-unquote cheap NHL deal. I look at it as these kids are more prepared ever now to make their way into the NHL. Once upon a time, it was, you know, you're out of junior hockey, you're going to bang it out in the American League for a number of years, and then maybe when you're 24, you're going to get a break and make it to the NHL. There's just so much more polish now. I know, you know, the cynic might say, oh, it's 23 guys and 23 Ubers at the end of every game. You know, they talk to their agent more than they talk to their teammates. But these kids are so prepared to join the pro ranks now that it's not even funny anymore.
Well, if you look at the NHL for the first time ever, and I might be getting the year wrong, I'm not known for my factual accuracy, so you know, just excuse me if I'm a year off. But it was in the last 2 years where, for the first time, 50% of the NHL was 25 or under. That had never happened before. And all of a sudden, for the first time ever, that is happening. And it's only going to continue that way. It's becoming a younger and younger league, and the leagues are depending on players who are going to be that age, so they expect them to be like that. We take a look at it now. What was the big story in hockey last weekend? It was Mitch Marner ending his contract dispute. The youngest players now, also for the first time, are making the most money. Like, it used to be you had to wait to be 30 years old before you got your biggest paycheck. Maybe then it became 28 years old before you got your biggest paycheck. Ever since Connor McDavid a couple of years ago, now you're getting your biggest paycheck, 21, 22, 23. There's a lot of different debates on, you know, even as prepared as these kids are, if they're really ready for that. But there's no question that the hockey world is changing, that there's more young players than ever. The younger players are dominating more than ever. They're earning more money than ever. And I think they're going to change the league. Like, for everybody here who's got kids or nephews or nieces or grandkids or whatever, like, you watch them now on social media, they are so bold. I like to test the line once in a while. I like to push and see, okay, if I do this, how much trouble am I going to get in? But for me, there is a line. Like, I have a Twitter rule. I will tweet out something, and I'll look at it for 10 seconds before I press the tweet button. And after 10 seconds, I'll say, do I still think this is a good idea? And most of the time, if I don't think it's a good idea, I won't do it. But sometimes I'll say, okay, let's see how much trouble I'm going to get in for this. A lot of these kids, they don't even think for 10 seconds. They're just going. And I just think it's amazing how much the world has changed and social media has changed the world in the last couple of years.
Further to that point, do you think Twitter should come with a breathalyzer?
That's what Glenn Healy always said. Twitter should come with a breathalyzer. And yes, the answer is yes. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all that stuff should absolutely. You know, now, somebody sent me an app the other day where you can set it to erase. Like, yeah. Someone can read it, and then after a minute, your text erases. That's probably the smartest thing of all.
I want to get your thoughts on junior hockey and your background on junior hockey as well. Junior hockey, I grew up, it grew up with me as my first love. I would go to WHA games in Toronto to see the Toros. Every now and then, we'd get tickets to go see the Maple Leafs. But generally, I was going to Marlies games.
Yep.
And my big first star that resonated with me was a goaltender by the name of Bruce Dowie. I thought Bruce Dowie was going to be the next, you know, the second coming of Ken Dryden. Marlies ended up
were you
going
right
to
about
Hamilton.
That?
I was not, and okay. It's not the first time I've been wrong about hockey. So Dowie never worked out, even though he was drafted by the Maple Leafs, never worked out. They went to Hamilton and then went to Guelph when I was at Guelph at university for 4 years. I think I missed maybe about 12 games mm-hmm. in my 4 years there. That was when they had Jeff O'Neill and Jeff Bass and Todd Bertuzzi. Like, it was a real good team and a real tough team too. Ken Bélanger, Ryan Vandenbush, some great CHL/NHL names. What was junior hockey for you when you were a kid?
Well, I grew up in Toronto too. Like, I mean, that was the one bad thing about growing up in Toronto. I mean, there's two bad things about growing up in Toronto. Number one, the rest of the country hates you. And number two, there isn't a lot of junior hockey. And, you know, I used to go to Marlies games too. I would go 2 o'clock Sunday.
Doubleheaders?
No,
Marlies and Maple Leafs?
My parents, no. I couldn't get into the Leaf games. So I did the Marlies. There were 2 o'clock games on Sundays. And I would go to those games. I love them. They left. And then I went to University of Western, 2 hours west of Toronto in London. And at that, now London has a beautiful downtown arena now. They didn't then. They had an old arena out by the 401, the big highway there. And the joke was, Bert Templeton, the legendary junior hockey coach, he would joke, the best thing about playing in London was it was right next to a Loblaws, so you could pick up 2 points in your groceries in the same night. But it was a terrible rink. It was way out in the middle of nowhere. Like, for a university student myself, it was hard to get there. But my first year, they had a great team. They had Louis DeBrusque was on that team.
Ooh, tough.
He was a key player on that team. But it didn't go through my veins like it did yours. I think the one biggest thing that I learned at Hockey Night in Canada, my first year at Hockey Night in Canada was 2003 and 4. And the one thing I learned was the more I traveled outside of Toronto, the more I realized how much that show meant to Canada. Like, I mean, I always loved hockey. Like every Canadian, I loved hockey. I loved watching hockey. But the more I got outside of Toronto, I realized what I was missing. I didn't see hockey at all the different levels. I didn't see how much junior hockey meant. Even though I loved Hockey Night in Canada, I didn't recognize how much the show meant to people. And I think that is the one thing I didn't realize because I was from that city, was the grassroots nature of the sport around the rest of the country, both for the television show and for the junior hockey itself. And I'm glad I've gotten to experience that, although not as much as I would like.
Everybody listening in Toronto is going to hate hearing this, but in a lot of ways it's true, and you see it through junior hockey. Once you get out of Toronto, that's where Canada starts.
Yep.
And that's where Canada starts, and a lot of Canadian hockey revolves around the local hockey rink. And when
so we're having a good start tonight. People already hate us because we're from Toronto, and now the people in Toronto are going to hate us because we're telling them how terrible Toronto is.
No, but we're trying to curry favor with the locals here by burying our own hometown. Then we'll grovel back to Ontario.
When we get back to Toronto, don't worry, we'll be telling them how great they are and how bad everything else is. That's right.
Oh, St. John, yeah, I spent a week there one afternoon.
Jeff, why would you do that?
You know, it's a little joke. Because the one thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on, and we're going to get to the newly branded TD station.
Yeah.
I almost call it Harbour Station, Trev. It's old habits die hard. In a lot of Canadian cities, unlike Toronto, the arena is where everybody goes.
Yeah.
Like, the rink is where everybody goes. After school, you go to the rink. You want to meet someone, you go into the rink. You want to get a cup of coffee, you go into the rink.
Yeah.
That is, like, the meeting place. And I think unless you have deep roots into junior hockey, you don't really get that. And it's not just at the CHL level as well. Like, all different levels of junior hockey and minor hockey to some extent as well. That is the meeting place for everybody in those towns and centers.
It's 100% true. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, and I was not, this will come as a huge surprise to all of you, I was not really that good a hockey player. But I remember playing, and we'd have kids on our team that were coming to Canada, they were new to Canada, their parents were new to Canada, and they saw this thing on TV, and they're like, we want to feel like part of Canada. You know, they would be at the rink, they would want to learn what the game was about, their favorite players became our favorite players. You know, it's been really an interesting year in Canadian sports this year. We've seen, you know, we saw the Raptors win the NBA championship. We saw Andrescu just win the U.S. Open. I think this country changed a lot in Vancouver in 2010 at the Olympics when Canada did so well. And we began to realize that we're good at lots of things and it's okay to puff our chests out about a lot of things. I think that's great because I think at times this country has not been good enough at talking about how great it is. But I think the one thing that I still want to do in my career, and I've been lucky, I've been in this business now for 26 years, but the one thing I've never done is I've never covered a Canadian Stanley Cup champion.
Right.
Like, I started in 93 just as the Canadians were winning that Stanley Cup, but I wasn't really in professional media then. If there's one thing I want to do by the time this business throws me out, and I think they're going to throw Jeff out before they throw me out.
I'm better looking. Not a chance. Not a chance for each.
I want to cover a Canadian team winning the Stanley Cup. That's the one thing. I don't care which team it is. I don't care which one of those seven teams wins it. But I want to cover a Canadian team.
What do you think it would be like? Because, listen, 93 was the last time, and that was, of course, Montreal beating the Los Angeles Kings. What do you think it would be like now? It doesn't matter what team it is, to your point. Whether it's Montreal, whether it's Winnipeg, whether it's Edmonton, Toronto, what would it be like?
Well, the thing with the Raptors is everybody cheered for the Raptors. Like, Craig Simpson's from Edmonton, Jim Houston's from Vancouver, Kelly Rudy's from Calgary, and they all said there were people cheering for that team that had never cheered for that team before. The three highest watched broadcasts in Canadian sports history are the 2010 gold medal, the 2002 gold medal, both of which Canada won, and third was Game 7 between Vancouver and Boston in 2011. And the thing about that is, not all the Canadian fans will cheer for all the Canadian teams. Like, the thing about that Vancouver Stanley Cup final is, half the people that watched that wanted to see Vancouver win the Stanley Cup, and half the Canadians watching that hated Vancouver and didn't want them to win the Stanley Cup.
Wasn't that they were cheering for the Bruins?
They
Although maybe in New Brunswick, which is still big Bruins territory.
Like, that's the, that would be, I think, the most hilarious thing about it is, if the Leafs were playing for the Stanley Cup and they had a chance to win it, how many people in this room would be cheering for the Toronto? Raise your hands. How many people in this room would be cheering for the Leafs to win? Okay.
All right.
How many people in this room would be cheering for the Leafs to lose? See, it's like, it's like 50-50. We just caused like a civil war in this room. But like, the great thing about the Raptors was, and Andrescu, was how they united the country. I think the drama about another Canadian team is that there would be people sitting there going, I can't, I don't want them to win before my team wins. And I think that would be incredible to watch.
It's like the Howard Stern rule. If you love Howard, you listen for 16 minutes.
Yes.
If you don't, you listen for 20. Yeah. Newly branded TD Station here in St. John. I've been a number of times, and it is a fantastic experience from stem to stern. What did you make of it in your first walkthrough today?
Well, we went through the coach's office. We went to the weight room. We went to the dressing room. I really like what they've done behind the scenes. Like, you know, players notice now, like, you know, like the amenities, the things that are there, what it looks like behind the scenes, what's your weight room like. What your weight room like is a big deal now. I've learned that dealing with players. Do they feel that when they play for your team, they have the best, like, they're so smart now in terms of what they eat, how they train. Like, we do our double headers and we're devouring pizza in the middle of them. Like, these players know how smart they are. They're so smart now what they do. That stuff matters. And I was very impressed by what I saw today in that dressing room, in that dressing room area. I think the thing I like the most, and we'll ask Trevor about it when he comes up, but there was a great sign above the coach's room, above,
yeah.
And it was on the way out, as the coaches leave the room, there's a sign above the door that said, "Praise your puppies." And I asked what that meant, and it was about, make sure you're giving the positive encouragement. You know, for people there who are of my age or older or a little bit younger, you know that we weren't, when we were growing up, we weren't often encouraged. It was very different then. Come on, you stupid so-and-so, like, get this done. Now, with this generation, they won't tolerate that. And you have to find a different way to motivate them. And I'm a big believer in those kinds of things. I think that you are more effective now when somebody does something wrong. It's, all right, here's what you did wrong, and here's how we're going to fix it. And I liked all the touches they had there with the dressing room, the weight room, everything they had there. But I love that little sign, praise your puppies. I think that's a winning culture.
That is great. And I think that the Barrie Colts are the only junior team that doesn't have the weight room in the rink. And you know how I know that? At the Combine 2 years ago.
Because you tried to work out there?
What's that? No, you got to go to LA Fitness across the street.
Okay.
At the Combine, Andrei Svechnikov, who was playing with the Barrie Colts, ended up getting selected by the Carolina Hurricanes second overall. We were at the Combine, and Brian Burke was in the room with us doing interviews. We have the whole crew there, Sammy Cosentino. And all
Brian wasn't exercising, I assume.
Brian was not exercising, okay, but the first thing Burke asked was, to Svechnikov, where do you work out? See if that's the old GM in him, right? See if he can trick about, oh, I work out at the rink. Really? Because Barrie doesn't have a weight room. But Svechnikov said, yeah, I work out across the street. Well, we're nearing the best time of the year, puck drop. It's also the time to pull your gear out of the basement and work off the summer rust. And there's no better way to handle your equipment to the rink than the next generation GMC Sierra. Why? The multi-pro tailgate. Whether you're 6 or 60, loading one hockey bag or a bunch, the multi-pro tailgate makes access to the truck bed easy. That's because it turns into a step that's 4 feet wide and can hold up to 375 pounds. Meaning, even when your legs are burning after a tough skate, the Sierra has you covered.
We're going to get you back to our live event at Rockies in St. John as part of the 15th anniversary of the St. John Sea Dogs of the QMJHL. You will hear from Trevor George in a couple of moments. Jeremy Poirier will drop by the podcast as well. But we're going to detour a little bit and rewind to Chicago Elliott as part of the Stars series, interviewing, I think it was 21 different players, one of them a former St. John Sea Dog, in Jonathan Huberdeau, someone who's, I still maintain, very quietly has put together an exceptional career early on in the NHL, one of the most underrated left wingers in the game. What did you expect from Huberdeau before we talked to him in Chicago?
Well, I've got a lot of experience with Huberdeau. I've dealt with him quite a bit over the years. I expected nothing less than what we got, which was good stuff. He's not a guy who makes a ton of bold proclamations, so I wasn't expecting those. But he's confident. He's not afraid to say what he wants to say. I'm just amazed. You know, Barzal, that's a guy who's really filled out in a short period of time.
Yeah.
Huberdeau's a tank, man.
He is, too.
He just looks like you would bounce off him if you tried to touch him. But Florida, this is a big year for them. No more BS. It's an important time for that franchise. They've got to take a step forward, and that's why they threw that money at Bobrovsky.
Here he is, Florida Panther winger, former St. John Sea Dog, Jonathan Huberdeau on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Markov down to handle it, side of the goal. Huberdeau, a shot, he scores! And the Panthers are on the board early, 1 minute, 1 second into the action. Markov to Huberdeau, the Panthers lead 1-0. Up the near side, looks cross ice in the clear. Huberdeau, a shot, he scores! And the Panthers are on the board early in the second. Jonathan Huberdeau, Ron Huberdeau, nifty move, and he scores! What a play, and the Panthers score, it's 3-1, Jonathan Huberdeau! Third period of play, we've gone just a hair over 3 minutes. Now in comes Huberdeau alone, Huberdeau makes a move in front, backhand, he scores! And the Panthers have tied the game! Jonathan Huberdeau walked in, went to the backhand, and this game's tied at one!
Has to go in behind, but maintains possession. Great effort by Huberdeau. Hands it over to Barkov. He fights Skinner away. Huberdeau again, curls in, Huberdeau to the net! Oh, what a goal by Huberdeau!
Pleased to be joined by Jonathan Huberdeau of the Florida Panthers, ex of the St. John Sea Dogs. I want to get to the Panthers, but let me ask you a couple things about the Sea Dogs. Big anniversary for them, 15 years in the QMJHL. It's a powerhouse franchise, great ownership, really well run. When you think back to your time with the Sea Dogs, what comes to your mind right away, Jonathan?
Well, obviously, we had the chance to have a really good team when I was there. You know, 50-plus win for 3 years in a row. And we lost in the final the first year. We won the Mem Cup the year after, went to the Mem Cup the third year. So, I mean, I feel my junior career was really fun. And I feel like, you know, I had a good coach too. Gerard Gallant was, you know, such a great coach for me, a role model, and showed me the way to go to the NHL.
Do you still keep in touch with your old Sea Dogs teammates? Like, when you go through what you went through with that team, generally those guys bond. You still keep in touch with some of those guys?
Yeah, they do like an alumni weekend every year. So I try to go back in St. John. It's not everybody that can go, but obviously a lot of guys. And I think it just brings back great memories that we had when we were there. And, you know, having such a winning team, I think it makes it different. And like I said, I think we play a game sometimes. And maybe next year we're going to play another game. And we draft our team and we play. And it makes it a lot of fun.
You should point out as well, you went into the Sea Dog Hall of Fame last summer,
yeah,
right?
Last summer.
That special for you? That important to you? Things like that?
Yeah, it was special. I think Trevor Giorgi, the new GM, came in. And I think he emphasized on a lot on alumni. And that was cool that he did the Hall of Fame. And I was the first one to be inducted. And that was, you know, a special moment. It was a lot of fun. And I thought they did a really good job. You know, I thought it was going to be like small, but it was like pretty big. Yeah. And I think next year, I think Mike Thomas, our captain, just got inducted this year. And I think it's Gerard Gallant and Mike Kelly next year. So,
one Hall of Fame down, one to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope I can make another one.
I'm curious, when was your first conversation with Joel Quenneville this summer?
It was at his press conference right after, we were there. It was like 2 days after the season, so we all stayed. Del Talon wanted us to go, and we had the chance to talk to him, but, you know, not personal. And 2 weeks after, you know, he called us, I think, on the phone, and we were back home and kind of told us what he wanted us to do and what he expected. And it was just nice, you know, to talk to him a little bit. And I talked with a lot of people, you know, about how he was as a coach. And obviously, you know, we know how he's a winning coach. And, you know, he made the playoff 18 of 20 season, I think I've seen. And the system that they had, too, was great, I feel, when we were playing against them. So I'm really excited and, you know, to be coached by Q.
What did he expect of you? Like when he said to you, John, I'm expecting this, what did he tell you?
Well, obviously he wants me to be, I'm already, you know, a leader in the team. He wants me to be an even bigger leader. And I think he just wanted me to get better this summer. He said, you know, kind of compare, you know, he said, didn't compare me to Patrick Kane, but he just said, Patrick Kane, every time he comes back after a summer, I feel he gets better. You know, he works on some things. And you feel like Patrick Kane can't get any better, but I guess he does. And that's what he kind of told me. So I think he really liked probably Taves and Kane. And he kind of, you know, Barkov and me, it's kind of like similar at the same age. So
what did you do this summer then? Like, what was the thing that Jonathan Huberdeau worked on this summer to impress Joel Quenneville?
You know, I need to work on my skating a lot in the summer, and that's what I did. I feel like, you know, I got better years by years, and obviously the strength, you know, your legs, your explosion, that's what I've been working on. And you know, skills too, you gotta work on your skills every summer. So I think, you know, I feel confident and I'm ready to go, and I want to have even a better year than last year.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at you right now, Jonathan, and I remember when you were drafted, your first year you went to camp, you were 171 pounds, and they sent you back to junior. They said not yet. Like, I'm looking at you now, and I think if four of us jumped you in this room, you would put us all down. Like, your arms are massive. When you compare yourself now to then, how much have you changed?
Well, I've changed. I've gained 30 pounds, you know, since then. So I think it's now I'm at 200. That's where I want to play at. You know, I feel comfortable, feel good in, you know, in the corners when I'm against like big guys. But yeah, it's crazy. But I knew it was gonna come. It was just the time, you know, the timing. And that summer I gained 10 pounds. The next summer I gained another 10. So I was getting like 10 pounds every summer of muscle. So that was what I needed to gain. And so, you know, when you get in at 170, I mean, there's some guys that can, they're quicker, but I wasn't as quick as other guys, so it was tougher to get around, like, you know, defensemen. But when I came back, you know, I tried to use, you know, my strength, my vision to get around that, and now I feel comfortable.
Now, who was the first, like, big guy that you battled and you won and you said, it's different for me now? Like, I'm where I need to be.
That's a good question. I mean, I'll say another thing. When my first training camp, I remember it was Brooks Orpik. And I think he cross-checked me, or he just pushed me, and I think I went 5 feet into the board. And that's when I was like, all right, that's the NHL. It's not junior anymore. That's what I knew. I kind of wasn't ready. I mean, I was having points. I think I was leading the team in preseason, but Dale said, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So he said, just go back junior, come back. And but I think the year after I came in, I was like probably 180, but a little bit more stronger. So I still had a hard time, but it was much easier. It's more like 2-3 years after when I started like to beat some defensemen and be stronger. And I was like, all right, now I can play in this league and be like really comfortable.
Last season obviously didn't go the way the Panthers wanted it to go, but there were some bright spots, specifically your offense. Panthers had no problem scoring. Top 10 team offensively in the NHL, number 2 power play in the entire league. It's zero problem scoring. Why is that? Like, what clicked for you guys last year offensively? Can you point to a couple of things?
Well, I think we have a good, you look at our forward, I mean, we have some guys that can score. We added, you know, some depth, you know, Conley, a Cherry. So obviously offensively we were good, but that's not how you win sometimes. You know, you're going to get scored on, and it's usually, I feel last year we had a lot of leads and we would let it go in the third period. But I think offensively it's just clicking, you know, we have good chemistry. We're trying to find some fits, you know, some 2 players per line, you know, and kind of mix it up. But I guess Q is going to do that job this year. But no, offensively, we felt good. It's just defensively, we had a hard time, you know, keeping the puck from our net. And that's what, you know, was kind of killing us at the end.
Everybody has talked about that with the Panthers, that we need to defend better from man 1 to man 20. How do you do that?
Well, obviously, you need a good system. And I think you need to commit to it too, as all the 20 players, you know, you need to commit to your system and do it the proper way, because if one guy doesn't do it, well, kind of falls down. Somebody has to cover for the other guy, somebody. So that's what I think we were doing, you know, the past few years. And I feel, you know, Q is going to come up with a great system and just play well to dedication. You know, it's a big thing defensively, blocking shots, a lot of those things. You know, even if you're a player that, you know, good offensively, you still got to block shots.
Have you been working on your technique?
No, not really. With the, yeah. Softbox.
That's always what I remember. I still remember Craig McTavish with the tennis balls and with the Oilers and all that. That is such a unique, I don't know if, I guess you can call it a skill, getting in the way of shots. That's expected now of everybody to block shots.
It is. I mean, it is pretty tough. I mean, you don't see it. Usually I always think I'm in the lane. And I'm like, okay, if he goes around, he's not going to hit the net. And, you know, probably 3 out of 5 times
yeah.
he goes through and, like, hit a stick, like, you know, go to the net. So it's, like, it's pretty tough. But there's some guys that are really good. And usually, you know, the PK guys that plays PK, they know how to block shot. And, you know, they move to the last second, and that's when they block the shots. And I think that's, you know, if you don't let in, there's some teams that blocks a lot of shot, and it's tough to play against them.
How many times have you gone out to the point and closed your eyes?
Probably when Shea Weber is going with a big slap shot. And
I don't care if I got benched. Yeah. I just moved.
I know, you can't. You're
with the really courtesy move, reach with the stick. And
that's paying the price for your teammates.
If there's one thing I'd like to see more of in the NHL, Jonathan, I want to see more rivalry playoffs. Like, I want to see a Battle of Alberta. I want to see Montreal, Toronto. I want to see those New York teams play against each other in the playoffs. We've seen a lot of California. Do you guys ever talk about, we'd love to play Tampa in the playoffs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we would like to finish first and finish eighth. But no, I mean, obviously it would be great for Florida, you know, having a rivalry like this. And now this year we're going to have a good, you know, I think we feel good about ourselves. They have a good team, so it's going to be a good matchup, you know. But yeah, obviously it's good to have rivalry. I mean, I remember when I was young, I think Boston played Montreal like
every year,
you know, and it was cool because every year it was amped up and, you know, everybody was ready to go and you never know who is going to win. And I feel we could do the same thing with Tampa.
Thanks so much for doing this. Best of luck this season with the Florida Panthers. You guys are poised to do some big things. So best of luck with that, Jonathan.
Thanks
for
you guys.
Doing this. All right, so that's Jonathan Huberdeau with the Florida Panthers. You heard him mention Trevor Georgie's name a couple of seconds ago. You'll hear from Trevor here in a couple of moments. What's realistic for Florida this season? They play in a tough division where they look up and they see Tampa, they see Toronto, and they see Boston. Can they hang there?
I don't think it's a question of realistic. Now it's what's expected. They better. Missing the playoffs for them this year is not an option. You don't spend what they spent on Joel Quenneville. You don't spend what they spent on Bobrovsky and Anton Strahlman and Noel Achary and Brett Connolly and say, oh, okay, it's all right if Toronto and Tampa and Boston are the only teams from this division to make the playoffs again. So I don't care what's reasonable. What I care about is what they have to do, and they know they have to be a playoff team.
It's a big all-in season for the Florida Panthers. Let's get back to Rockies now as part of the 15th anniversary of the St. John Sea Dogs. 31 Thoughts, the podcast from St. John, New Brunswick. He's the general manager who is now with everybody else celebrating the 15th season of Sea Dogs Hockey, an organization that has won a Memorial Cup and has won 3 President's Trophies. Please put your hands together for general manager Trevor Georgie. Okay, hang on. Before Elliot gets in, I want to get your thoughts, expanded thoughts on, that's okay, on the rink, on the dressing room,
What? One sec. Well, first of all, thank you very much for bringing us here.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks
for
you guys have been a great host, and we really appreciate it.
Yes, all that is true.
Thank
now,
you, Elliot.
Thoughts on what Elliot talked about vis-a-vis the rink and what kids want. As you know right now, recruiting is a big deal in junior hockey. Is that, like, how do you have a competitive edge over other junior hockey teams? I mean, everyone plays with the same rules, but not everybody has an owner like Scott McCain. What is your competitive edge?
Yeah, I mean, first praise your puppies. I have nothing to do with that. And that's all our head coach, Josh Dixon, and his coaching staff. That's something, a style that they have embraced and an approach that they want to have with the players in terms of being positive and encouraging. And that's credit to them for that. But yeah, certainly from our perspective here in St. John, we're a young front office, probably the youngest hockey operations staff in the country. But the junior hockey player has changed, and they have options, and they're looking at NCAA, they're looking at prep school options, they're looking everywhere. And for us, as it comes down to people, you know, we have an owner from the top that understands the junior hockey cycle. You know, Scott, Jeff, and you know, he's someone that knows that you're going to go through the ebbs and the flows of junior hockey to win. He gives us everything we need and all the resources we need to win. Our team loses quite a bit of money a year. I won't divulge that number. I don't say that with pride. Obviously, we want to break even or make money, but he does it because he's investing in young people, not just young hockey players, but young people. And when we draft players that are the best player available, and we recruit them. We go and we spend time knocking on doors, sitting in living rooms, sitting at kitchen tables, having dinners, meeting with these players. And I think a main part of that, again, go back to people. We don't just say that education is important to us. You know, our head coach has two master's degrees. We have a group of coaches that have either played in the NHL or very interesting stories of pro hockey. For us, it's not just about the facility. It's about the people around the table. And I know when we sit across from a parent and an agent and a player, we put the St. John Sea Dogs up against any other program. Anthony, our assistant GM head scout, we talk about it all the time. When we meet with a player that is thinking NCAA, it's not NCAA or CHL. It's NCAA or Sea Dogs. That's the option, and that's our approach.
Well, first of all, your coach has, what, two master's degrees, that you said?
Yep.
I don't have a single university degree, so already I'm feeling incredibly inferior tonight. You know, you're not from here, right?
Nope, not from
okay,
here.
Okay, so you have to sell a place that you're not from. Tell us about your first impressions of St. John when you came here, how close they were to what you had been told what to expect. And what is a guy who's not from here says, this is what I love about this community that you're going to grow to love too?
That's a great question.
So here's the, give us the pitch. Yeah. We're the parents, give us the pitch.
You're the parents?
We're the parents, give us the pitch.
Oh, I don't know if I want to divulge all this. It's our secret sauce. No, so look, when I moved here from Mississauga, Ontario, and I knew Scott previously. When I took the Sea Dogs role, Scott said to me, he brought me up in his office and said, look, there's one caveat. You need to come here and visit our team at our company Christmas party. So you don't have the job until you come visit the team. So he brought myself and my girlfriend Devin, who's from Vancouver, to St. John in the dead of winter in a snowstorm, and took us through the streets of uptown St. John, took us through the whole community, and had us meet the whole team. And I remember Scott saying, well, you've come here in the worst snowstorm of the year. You've come here in the dead of winter, and you guys are still smiling at the end of the weekend and still really love the city. And we had nothing but great things to say. Anytime you move across the country and leave your family behind, it's challenging. But St. John, you know, has embraced me as one of their own. And for me, it's a pretty easy city to be a champion of. It's affordable. People are friendly. They love their hockey. And it's a city on the rise. So it's quite easy to sell. So when we sit across from a family, we just tell them, look, we have an owner that spends a lot of money on hockey because he cares about players as people. We have an academic director that has a PhD and will hold you accountable. She's also associate dean of the business school, so she's going to hold you accountable. And if you don't go to school, you don't play hockey. So school, hockey, all of it all together, the best billet families in the CHL, and that's why they need to play for the St. John Sea Dogs. And in a 15-year history, 14 seasons going to our 15th, 3 President's Cups, 1 Memorial Cup, and an NHL list of players that goes on and on.
Well, I'm glad you got to that because, listen, there's a number of NHLers that have gone through St. John, whether it's, you know, Hoffman, whether it's Huberdeau. You know, there's a ton of St. John's. Charlie Coyle went to the Stanley Cup Final. I am curious, Trevor, because you mentioned, you know, kids that are going to the NHL from St. John. This year, the number is 10.
We have 10 players.
Draft eligible players?
That's right.
How does a coaching staff, how do you prepare these players for A, the season where in the background, and there's a lot of them, there's that thing in Montreal where Gary Bettman hands people jerseys?
Yeah, we should make sure they're properly insulated. So we work with a sports psychologist. We have a team chaplain. I mean, even you and Elliot coming in today and sharing your stories with them, that's really valuable to them. We have a coaching staff that is quite extensive in terms of their hockey experiences and varied experiences. So it's constant. It's something that we're focused on. We talk about all the time. We talk about this a weekly, sometimes daily, in terms of how is everyone getting along? What is the team dynamic? Who needs what? Checking in with them, checking in with mom and dad, checking with their agents. We're building relationships with our players, and I think the closer you can get to them, the more you'll know and the more you can help them out. But yeah, it's certainly challenging. I mean, you guys are the ones making up the lists and making our lives more difficult.
That's Jeff. I don't make junior draft lists. It's all Jeff's fault.
Yeah, it's media that certainly with their list complicates things. But
how much do you talk to them about that?
A lot, yeah. And you know, we can keep telling them don't read them, but you know what you're going to tell a teenage boy, don't do something, what's he going to do? So so we don't say that. We take a softer approach and talk to them. I know in the one list, I couldn't even remember the website, but it came out back in the summertime. I reached out to a couple players and just said, yeah, hey, so what do you think? They saw it, obviously. They weren't surprised by it. They didn't say, oh, what list? I mean, they've been following it. And you just talk about it and say, how are you dealing with it? What did you think? And move on from there. So we really try to have a lot of communication with our players and be real. And to go back to what you said about parents when you're recruiting, mm-hmm. we tell parents, you know, your son is going to come to St. John. He's probably going to have his first girlfriend in St. John. He's probably going to be broken up with for the first time in St. John. You know, he's probably going to go through all these things off ice in St. John. And, you know, trust us on the hockey side, but really trust us on the human being side. And if they're not going to be a pro hockey player, they're going to be a damn good human being coming out of St. John Sea Dogs.
That's awesome. Now, what are the biggest questions you get asked by parents or players? Like, what do they ask you?
I mean, you get everything. I think that family dynamic has changed. So hockey is so expensive, right?
Yeah.
And look, I never played pro hockey. That's not my background. So you also have to understand what you know. You know what you know and know what you don't know. So the family dynamic for hockey players has changed. Hockey is incredibly expensive. So you have, typically a parent, one or both parents, high income, working hard to be able to put their son through hockey, typically highly educated. And in today's environment and household environment, the mom has a way bigger role than I think anybody in hockey gives the hockey mom credit for.
Sure.
So sitting across from a parent and talking about hockey, we'll spend 40% of time talking to the dad, and the dad usually wants to know about ice time and power play and opportunity. And then we'll spend 60% of the time talking to the mom about, hey, and I look in this crowd, we have wonderful billet families. We have a great education program. Yeah, guess what? If your son is late for class, he's going to get a warning. And if he skips or lies to us, he's not playing. And mom, those are the things that moms care about, and those are things that dads care about. And we address those. And that's how I think hockey has changed. And we're not a pressure environment, although we've had a lot of success bringing in players who've had NCAA commitments. We know what our program is. We're audacious. We're ambitious. We have big goals. We want a Memorial Cup here in St. John. And we're not going to put a pen in someone's hand and make them sign a contract. If they want to be a Sea Dog and win with us, great. And if you don't want to call St. John home, well, good luck to you.
You know, it's a funny thing. No matter what sport it is, hockey, basketball, football, you name it, whatever, if there's recruiting involved, win the mom, win the player. That's always the rule. Always the rule.
It's a dating as well.
That's right. Yeah, that's 100% true. Like, yeah. That is totally true. You had something interesting in your arena we saw today. So earlier this year, there was an NHL team. They're starting to go through some building preparations. And they said that you're going to see more arenas rip out seats and put an area in there for younger fans to stand and watch the game. They don't want to sit. They want to stand. They want to socialize. They want to drink and eat with their friends. They don't want to sit in a seat. And you've got something behind one of your nets where you're doing that now.
Absolutely, Elliot. So imagine coming in as a 20-year-old president of an organization, and you know Scott McCain and yep. successful global businessman right here from New Brunswick, and saying to him, hey, here's a great idea how we're going to drive more revenue. Let's rip out 200 seats. Yeah, that didn't go over so smoothly. So explaining that through to Scott about the social experience and the desire for people in the younger audience to come to hockey games and socialize with friends, hang out. So our Moose Light Ice Bar has a capacity for about 150 to 200 people. Our players, and Jeff, you'll appreciate this, they walk out through that ice bar.
I love that.
In a WWE ECW, you know.
You got the right guy announcing.
Yeah, right guy, right? Yes, we absolutely do. They come through that entrance. So you're bringing fans ice level, you're bringing them close to your players, you're allowing them to have a beverage, have snacks, socialize. And what we've seen, and we had Andrew Olin from Moosehead Breweries in on opening night, and he looked around and says, you know, you have a really, really something special going on here because you have young people who are starting their night at a junior hockey game and then going out afterwards. And yeah, it's been wildly successful. And if we're winning, it's great. And if we're losing, they're still having a good time.
You know, this is one of the more progressive organizations around the CHL. You try different things, you do different things. Ripping out seats has got to be an interesting conversation with your owner. I get the sense, Trevor, that when you have creative meetings with your team, hey, let's out of the box this, let's blue sky things, there must be some pretty wacky ideas that get presented to you. Can you give us a couple?
You're looking at someone in particular. Like, who are you looking at?
Can here? I say this?
I'm usually presenting the wacky ideas, and my team's rolling their eyes, I think, in a lot of cases. Look, I think fundamentally as an organization, we're a small team in the office and on the hockey operations side, but church and state is not separate. You know, I think a progressive organization has hockey and business working hand in hand. So I get ideas from my hockey ops folks all the time for the business side, and I get ideas from the business side on the hockey side. So yeah, some of the ideas, I mean, we certainly love to, you know, not just spark, but throw propane on some rivalries. So we've tried some in-game elements where we've thrown I remember one game in particular, we were playing the Moncton Wildcats in a Halloween game, and we were up by, I think, 3 goals with 4 minutes to go, and we end up queuing up a shot. And again, Jeff, being a live audio wrestling guy, would appreciate this. We threw up.
Love that old show.
I love that show. I used to fall asleep to that show Sunday night.
I do that a lot to people.
Yeah. Hopefully not this podcast, but so we end up rolling out, you know, a clip of the Undertaker destroying, you know, the Moncton Wildcats logo, and I mean that wasn't received particularly well by the league or by Moncton. Our fans loved it, but we always call that the curse of the Taker because we end up winning that game, I think 7-1. But we're gonna try different things, and there's ideas that are outrageous.
Give us one idea that was too outrageous even for you.
Yeah, I'm usually coming. We talked a lot about character development, so I've gone through the Disney leadership and customer service program, yep. And we learned a lot about character development. And so something we've talked about is creating Captain St. John, and this captain that would be not a mascot, but someone dressed as a sailor, and you know, sit behind the other team's bench and heckle them. And we've talked about creating characters for rival teams. So, you know, Moneybags X City, and then have them be kind of the pretend owner or leader of that other team that we're playing. So we've thought a lot about character creation and what that could do for the fan experience, or looking at soccer with the supporter sections. We've talked about that. We've talked about everything. We've talked about people dropping down from the ceiling like Sting. Yeah. We've had our mascot go down center ice and fire a puck at the other team's net and all kinds of things. So we don't stunt any creative ideas, but kind of rules and regulations certainly keep us a bit boxed in.
I got to tell you, Jeff, like I can't see how making like a person in another team's logo or to heckle them, I can't see how that would ever go wrong. So I think you should try it.
I'm going to get the league on the phone right now. We're going to have a phone call. No, you know what? The league has been very supportive of a lot of our ideas, so good. I appreciate them.
So then the flip side of that question is, what's sacred? Like, what do you think will never be changed? Like, this idea comes across my desk, and there's not a chance because we're not even going to entertain the idea of changing this.
I think it's just about being respectful. I think at some point it's entertainment. We're here to entertain fans, but you need to be respectful to some of the traditions. I mean, national anthems and things like that will always be sacred. We have a professionally trained opera singer that performs our national anthem. The logos are sacred. I'm still quite traditional in my values, but we're always trying to innovate and look at different ways. What I do think and what I hope changes is, you know, this is a unique model with the Sea Dogs. We have a president/GM, a role, business and hockey married together. I think it works great, and it's very special because our business folks are really tied and entrenched in the hockey, and our hockey folks can walk up and have a chat with our CFO any day of the week. And I think that's something that still hasn't really caught on, but it's a model that really works and really makes us all feel like a real team when everyone is rowing in the same direction. And it's still, I think, sacred for most, and I hope that it's something that organizations look at to be progressive and bring everyone together rowing in the same direction.
I want to ask you about trades. I can recall talking, and your first, now was Julian Gauthier your first big trade? Would you call it your first big one?
It'd be Callum Booth. Who was our starting goalie for their Mem Cup run. Simon Bourque, who was drafted by the Montreal Canadiens. And then Julian Gauthier was a really big one. Yeah.
Okay. I remember talking to Brian Burke once about trades. And his first transaction was Kiprios. But then the first whopper was Bobby Holík for Sean Burke and Eric Weinrich. And he said, I didn't have an assistant general manager. It was just me and my phone. And I would pick up the phone, and I would put it down. And I walk around the office, and I have no one to talk to. This is my first trade. What am I doing? Pick up the phone, dial, hang up right away. And eventually talked himself into doing the deal. And then when he did the deal and hung up the phone, had that sense of, what did I just do? And went for a walk around the block because he didn't have anyone to bounce ideas off of. And this was his first big one. What was your first big trade like, or your first deal? Did you ever have one where you're picking up the phone? I guess people don't pick up phones anymore. Are they just like...
Did you ever have one where you're about to press send on that text and you're really nervous about it?
And then, no, I'm not going to call now. Oh, I'm not going to call now. Did you ever have something like that? I would be like that.
Yeah, I think the Julian Gauthier trade was certainly a huge one. He was having a really good World Juniors. You know, I'm someone that doesn't make decisions in a silo. I really lean on my team, and I think of my role as someone that distills information and then makes the most sound decision based on that. So leading into that trade period, I sat with our board, with Scott on the board, and I went around, we talked about what our plan would be for the Christmas trade period, and everyone went around and gave their opinion, and it was close in terms of what we wanted to do. And Scott turned when they asked for his vote of should we go all in or not, and Scott says, well, Trevor has my vote, so whatever he says, let's do that. And that gave me the confidence to know, okay, this is the path we're going to go. So we end up going all in that year. And the Callum Booth trade was one where I remember I did that with Phil Boucher. And I was actually at home in bed. And we'd started talking after a game. I think they had a rough game in Quebec, so I thought it's a good time to call. Talked to Phil, and we talked through it and talked through it and talked through it. It got to about 1 in the morning. And finally, the deal got done. And I turned over to my girlfriend, to Devin, and I said, we got Callum Booth. The deal's done. And Devin wasn't there. She had already left the room and gone to sleep in the other room. So sometimes you get caught up in your own world of of trades. But the other big one was Joe Valeno. Joe Valeno was, you know, captain of our franchise, first exceptional player in the QMJHL. You know, exceptional status, incredible player and great human being. And that deal was with Dom Ducharme with Drummondville, who's now with the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, that trade has helped us, as difficult as it was for our franchise, has helped set us up in the future, including Jeremy Poirier, who you'll be interviewing later today.
Well, and that's an interesting one because there is that period where, listen, we all know trades are made, but they can't be announced, and this player is not playing because he's already been dealt, but you go through the act of it. And a lot of times, those players who have been dealt but it hasn't been announced will go home. They will leave the team. Valeno that guy? Or did he hang around to help?
I'm staring at Joe Valeno's billet father right now, and I can see Joe stuck around. Joe understood. He knew that it was part of the rebuild for us. Joe actually came to center ice, and we had a ceremony for him before he left. He got a standing ovation from the fans. It was very emotional. I had two young billet brothers of Joe bawling next to me on the ice as we presented him with his frame. But Joe understood, and we keep in touch today. I know his family here in St. John keeps in touch with him, and he got it, and he understood the business of hockey.
Last one for me. Do you want to make any proclamations for the upcoming season, Trevor?
No. No, look, we're going to be a better team. I'll make a few proclamations longer term. So We think we have the best group of 2002 and 2003 born players in the country. If we look at the players on our list, not all of them are here yet. We're building to host a Memorial Cup in 2022. And so we've lived through the tough years, but St. John deserves a Memorial Cup. Scott understands it. You don't live through two tough years of hockey to not go for that. And our whole team knows what that plan is. So everybody, players, front office, hockey ops, everyone is rowing in the same direction. And not this year, but next year and the year after, hope to make runs for back-to-back championships and hopefully won one right here in St. John, New Brunswick.
You're a gracious host, a wonderful organization. Trevor, thanks so much for stopping by, and thanks for your hospitality. Like, you did not have to do this. You called me a while ago, beginning of the summer. We started talking about this, and listen, knowing you and knowing Scott McCain, you knew that the minute that Elliot and I said, yeah, we can free up our time, that this was going to be turkey, and it's proved to be. Best of luck this season, Trev.
You two, first class and generous with your time. Thank you very much.
Have you fooled, eh?
Very fooled. Thank you very much.
Trevor Georgie, the president, general manager of the St. John Sea Dogs. 15th anniversary, Memorial Cup in 2011, three President's Trophies. And a big piece of the team this year is a wonderful defenseman with fantastic hands and will be a first-round draft pick come June in Montreal. Jeremy Poirier, please come up to the front for the round of applause for this fine defenseman. We already bored them this afternoon. We're going to bore him a little bit more. Good to see you. Good to see you, Jeremy. Thanks so much for stopping by today. What did you make of what Trevor had to say? Anything stick with you? Anything interesting there?
I mean, pretty everything he said was right, and I think we're just looking forward to have success next year. We had a pretty tough year last year, didn't win as much as we wanted, so I think this year is just going to be like bounce back season and try to get some more wins.
You know, see, Jerry, you're off to a great start, because when your general manager comes up and you say everything he said was right, you're going to go really far. Like, that is an excellent answer. So wait a sec. So we met with the players earlier today, and we were chatting with them. We took some questions for them, and were you the one with the wooden bow tie that they were making fun of?
Yeah.
So we asked the players who's the best dressed guy on the team, and then we asked who has looks like a bag of potatoes, I think was the phrase I used. And they started saying that you had some interesting style choices. Like, what's with the wooden bow tie? What is that story?
For a draft last year, my mom saw this wooden bow tie at the store, so she said, like, you should wear that for a draft. So I said, okay, why not? So I wear it for a draft. I just became my lucky bow tie after that. So every time I have a big game, just wear my bow tie. And all the coaching staff, especially Steph, just making fun of me wearing my wooden bow tie. But I think it's a pretty good style.
You see, you know what? I'm so impressed by that, because it says a lot of things. Number one, you're confident in yourself. You can wear the wooden bow tie. And number two, that guys are poking fun at you and you're like, no, you know what? I'm good with this. I can handle it. That says good on you for not backing down, Jeremy. That's awesome stuff.
Thank you.
All right.
A couple of things I want to get to with you. Trevor mentioned, you know, this is a big season for the St. John Sea Dogs. A number of draft eligible players building to a program where it's going to peak next season and probably the season after that, but it's still going to be a good year this year. Just from a personal point of view, and we asked Trevor how you prepare kids for this, and this is your draft year. It's a big season of hockey for the Sea Dogs, and it's also a big year for you. How do you prepare any differently, knowing that it's your draft year and there's going to be knocks on the coach's door after games, and can we speak to Poirier, can we speak to... How are you going to manage that? How are you prepared for that?
I think I'm just going to focus on how I play and just play as simple as I can, just play my game and try to help the team win. I think my main focus right now is helping the team win. I think if the team has success, I'll have success. I just think I'm not really a stressed person in life, so I just take those games as normal games and just play my best, and we'll see what happens at the draft.
Will you wear the bow tie to the draft?
I'll probably have to. I'll probably buy a new one for a draft.
No. If this is a good year, you got to wear the wooden bow tie to the draft.
Okay, we'll keep the wooden
bow tie. At least we'll have one good story to tell that night. Now, you know, it's easy to be happy and fun-loving and everything when things are going well. It's harder to be a stand-up person and be fun-loving and all that when things are tough. What did you learn about yourself when things were tough?
I think last year we had a pretty tough moment. I think we had like a 17-game losing streak. So I think at that time I just learned to battle through adversity and never give up. I think that's the main thing. Like when you go to the rink every day and like you try to battle, but you end up losing again. I think you just have to battle through and like just keep working hard and like battle every practice and every game. Just give your best, and the best is yet to come here in St. John's. So I think just keep working.
All right.
You know, mentioned your draft day and focused on the bow tie, and that's fun. But how much does it mean to you to play in an organization that had Thomas Chabot, and how cool was it to have Thomas Chabot greet you?
I saw him at the draft when I first got drafted. It was upstairs with the coaches and stuff, his staff. It was pretty fun to meet him for the first time, but I think it's a great organization. They win before. Like, this organization know how to win. All the facilities we have, like the room, the weight room, the gym, everything we have, it's pretty nice. So it gives us, like, every player in this team the best chance to perform. So I think to have, like, players like Chabot have success here before, it's a chance for me to prove that I can have success too and make my mark the city of St. John.
Now, who's your favorite team growing up?
Montreal Canadiens.
Now, your parents big Canadiens fans too?
Yeah.
Okay, and who's your favorite player growing up?
Alexander Ovechkin.
Alexander Ovechkin?
Yeah.
So, like, when you see Ovechkin winding up for a one-timer in a couple of years, how are you going to stop that?
I don't know. I'm trying to put my bodies in front of it. I don't know.
You're going to put your body in front of that thing?
I guess.
Good on. Now, do you think that if you're battling Ovechkin for a puck in the corner, do you think you can take him down?
He's a big body. He's like 240. I don't know.
You're a big guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, not as big as you do. I'm just punch Svechnikov in the face in a fight and just kills him. I don't know. But I think it's going to be impressive to me if I make my way to the NHL, just play against all my idol and player I've been watching growing up. It's going to be special for me. Yeah. So this is going to happen one day.
Have you ever thought about, like, if you and your parents ever talked about, for example, say, if it would work out and you could be drafted by the Canadiens? Have you guys ever talked about that?
Not really. My parents know, like, this is a big year for me, so they don't try to stress me. Just don't talk to me about it. So we don't talk about the draft too much, but it'd be special for me to be drafted by Montreal Canadiens for sure.
Mm-hmm. Looking for a young defenseman. The draft is in Montreal this year. Kid from Châteauguay. I don't know. I'm just trying to put all these things together. You know, one of the things that people notice about you right away when they watch you play is you have great hands. Like, you really have fantastic hands. Like, if I just saw you out skating, the morning skate, and I was just watching your hands, I'd say, oh, yeah, that guy's a winger or that guy's a center. I wouldn't know that you were a defenseman. Were you ever a forward?
I play forward till Bantam.
Yep.
Yeah, so in Bantam, my coach has said, like, we're only going to have 40 this year. So if you want to have more ice time, just play D, and you can go coast to coast every shift. So I said, oh, why not? So
Jeez, what's not to like
great
about
coach.
That?
Great coach. Wow.
Is that the same approach here in junior?
Not really. Yeah.
Talk about some of your teammates. Like, who are the guys who keep the group light?
I think I can do it. I'm a funny guy in the room. Try to calm down the atmosphere, and I'm fun with that. Also, Dawson Stairs. I think he's funny too, and just try to keep it cool in the room and stuff like that.
So, like, when you guys are together, what do you guys like to do? Are you guys movie watchers? Are you guys video game players? What do you guys like together?
Prank people a lot. Like, we try to just prank guys in the room and stuff like that. But we're only, like, more, like, calm perspective. We, like, watch, like, Netflix series.
Okay, what's the big Netflix series right now?
Me and Stairsy watch Suits right now.
Suits?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one. I know there were a lot of NHL players who used to watch Suits. That's a big one.
Pretty good.
Now, who is the big prank victim? Like, who always gets caught?
I'd say Musico. He's not alert. Today I practiced Deacon Poot in the back there, just put a cup of water under his helmet, and just the water spilled all over him, so he got caught again. Like, I mean, come on, Patty.
What is the best prank that's ever been pulled in your group that you've ever seen? What was the best one?
It wasn't my midget team. We were sleeping in the hotel, and we moved, like, all the things in the room, in the hallway, from a guy, like, his bed, all his thing was in the hallway. and he just, it was a call up too, so he didn't know what to do. Like, he didn't want to get like to the coach and say something, so he just tried to put everything back in the room. But like,
there's a great
welcome to the team.
Yeah, well, there's a great moment like that in the HBO 24/7 series Pittsburgh Penguins and Washington Capitals Road to the Winter Classic. So Lovejoy's a rookie, and they're on the road, and the Penguins vets do the same thing. Lovejoy and one of his guys go out to dinner. They pull all the stuff out of his hotel room, put it in the hallway. And the camera crew's there, and whoever's working the camera says, "Well, what are you going to do?" And Lovejoy says, "Well, I'm a rookie, but I'm going to find out who did this and not do a thing about it." Who's a tough, as a defenseman, who's the toughest player to play against in the Q, and why is it Alexis Lafreniere?
Yeah, like you said, it's probably Alexis Lafreniere because his skill set, he's so shifty. Like, he can move around the ice so easy, and like, his moves are pretty good. He's good in puck protection, too. He's pretty much good in every aspect of the game. Can skate well, can shoot the pucks. I mean, it's pretty tough to defend with this player.
Who else is tough from a defenseman's point of view out there? Who should we know about?
Andrix LaPierre. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, so, yeah. But, I mean, same thing as Lafreniere. The guy is pretty shifty, can skate really well, great hands, and can shoot too. So, I mean, it's pretty tough to defend.
I want to ask about Alec Reed. I know you were very close, a close friend of yours who passed away, and a really nice tribute by you this season to change your number. Can you share some thoughts about him?
Yeah, a couple of months ago, a pretty good friend of mine just passed away. So I tried to add number 44 last year, and I tried wear number 54 for him this year. I always wear his number growing up, and I used to play with him since I was in Pee Wee, and always wanted number 54, so I think just an honor for me to wear number 54 next year and play for him and dedicate my season to him.
That's fantastic. You're a wonderful young man, yep. A talented prospect, and a wonderful young man. Best of luck this season. We look forward to seeing you play for St. John this year, and look forward to seeing you in Montreal in June for the draft. Thanks, yeah. Jeremy.
Thank you very much.
Jeremy Poirier, defenseman, St. John Sea Dogs from Châteauguay, number 54 in your program, Elliot.
What else you got scheduled here?
Looks like it's just you and me, bud.
I wanted to address, what's your name again, young man? Come on up. Come on up.
So this young man...
Here, have a seat.
Come on up. Grab a microphone.
We're going to interview you. You're going to be our next guest.
Put your hands together.
Grab a microphone. First of all, tell us your name.
Colton.
Colton, what's your last name?
Howes.
Colton Howes, okay. And your dad brought you here tonight, and you're a big hockey fan, right? Who's your favorite team?
Boston Bruins.
The Boston Bruins. Is that a popular choice or not?
In New Brunswick, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. I know that there's people definitely out in the Maritimes. Who's your favorite player?
Torrey Krug.
And is your dad a Bruins fan? Like, how come you started to like the Bruins?
Most of my family likes the Bruins.
Your family likes the Bruins. That's a great reason. Now, which team does your family like to beat the most? Like, when they see the Bruins beat... Which team are they the happiest?
The Canadians.
Yeah, you like to see the Bruins beat the Canadians,
can
right?
Can I tell you a story, Colton? I can recall being your age and watching Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. And I would sit on the floor, and my parents would sit on the couch. Me and my sister would sit there and watch the game. And one day, out of the blue, my dad says this to me. He says, "Jeff, I want you to always remember something. You're a fan of two hockey teams." And I said, "Two hockey teams? What do you mean, Dad?" And he said, "You're a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs and whoever's playing Montreal." Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you were sort of raised the same way. That's your favorite team to beat, it's Montreal?
Yes.
Now, do you play hockey?
Yeah.
What position do you play?
Defense.
Well, there's now that Torrey explains Krug. Everything. All right. Now,
Elliot's a journalist.
That's right. I'm a great reporter. Can't you tell? Now, do you which way do you shoot? Left or right?
Left.
Okay. And what team did you play for last year?
The Adam AA Hawks.
The Adam AA Hawks? And who was your big rival? Like, who did you guys play against that you like to beat?
The Double A Sabres.
The Double A Sabres. And did you guys have a good record against the Double A Sabres last year?
Yes.
Nice job. Now, the most important thing is, when you play, do you have fun?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's the most important thing, Colton. As long as you play, you have fun.
I have a question for you. When I was a kid, Saturday nights, I could stay up to watch all three periods. That was a real treat for me. But during the week, Monday to Thursday. Friday I could stay up late if there's a game, but seldom was there ever a Leaf game. Monday to Thursday, I could watch the first period, and my mom said, see you later, you're going to bed. No second and third period. So here's what my dad would do. My dad would say, all right, I'll take Jeff to bed, and he'd take me off to bed, tuck me in, and he'd take a tiny little radio, and he'd tune it to the Maple Leaf game and put it under my pillow. I could listen to the second and the third period. Kids these days, and you're one of them, do you get to watch all three periods of hockey during the week, or is it bedtime after the first?
After the first.
After the first, you're off to bed? But Saturday night, you can stay up to watch all three periods?
Sometimes.
Who's the tougher parent, mom or dad, about going to bed?
My mom.
Yeah, your mom. That's why they're the best. They actually
me
care.
Me too, bud.
Well, Colton, thanks very much for coming up, eh? Thanks very much. Great to meet you. Thanks for coming out tonight, Colton. And we really appreciate you coming and joining us this evening. Thanks a lot, my man.
Hey, Colton, thanks for staying up late for us, hey, pal?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, buddy. Round of applause for Colton. Thanks, buddy. All right. Oh, you're still here?
Still here. Okay. Let's tell a couple stories.
Shoot.
Your first moment
on
Hockey Night in Canada.
December. You've got the video of this. You went in the CBC archives and found this.
How
do you go back and watch yourself, honestly?
Are you cringe? Not a chance. I would never go back and look. I don't even like looking at myself the first time. Why would I want to go back and look at it the rest of the time? Because I remember my first one was October.
That question, by the way, was just an excuse for Elliot to talk about himself.
No, I thought you...
Hey, Jeff, what's your first Hockey Night memory like? Well, let me tell you, Elliot. Well, hang on, Jeff. My first one...
You were taking forever to get started, so I figure I better get going.
Okay, story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. No, go ahead. You go first.
Ovechkin.
December 29th, 2007. It's an Ottawa-Washington game. I'm in Ottawa. You're rinkside doing a Leaf game. Ron opens up the program at 6:30 Eastern. There's a split screen. There's you and me and everyone across Canada saying, who's that guy? Ron sets the stage. We're going to go to Elliot Friedman at the Air Canada Center. Maple Leafs are playing the Buffalo Sabres or whomever. You're good, Hamill. Are playing the New York Rangers. But first, we head to Canadian Tire Center, Ottawa Senators, and the Washington Capitals. Joining us from Hockey Night in Canada Radio for the first time, Jeff Merrick with Alex Ovechkin. Jeff, and it felt like forever between when Ron said Jeff and I asked Alex the first question, because every memory of sitting in front of that couch with my parents watching Hockey Night in Canada all came back to me. And I think I did have that moment, which was, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah.
I don't belong here. But when you're a kid, one of two things is the coolest thing in the world, either playing in the NHL or being on Hockey Night in Canada. Number two is not bad.
Now, what do you remember about that day?
I remember going to morning skate and thinking it was the coolest thing because I got to drive to the rink with Bob Cole.
Yeah.
Now, Bob, as you know, always takes the front seat.
I'm going to tell that story.
I was tipped off about that, but more on those stories with Bob Cole in the front seat in a couple of moments. I remember it was interesting watching Bob at the rink interact with coaches, specifically Bruce Boudreau. And the types of conversation he had with him, which is specifically, what are your lines? That's the one thing that Bob Cole always wanted to know was, what are your lines? So watch the Caps skate, watch the Senators skate, talk to Bruce Boudreau after. I had known him when he was coaching in the American Hockey League with Manchester and then Hershey. And so we cut up a little bit. And then I remember going back to the hotel and making way too many notes. It was my first game, and I was doing rinkside, and I wanted to be prepared for anything, way over-prepped. And normally on a day like that, like afterwards, like now if I was doing a rinkside game, I'd go to the morning skate, go back to the hotel room, maybe go for a run, do a little workout, grab a shower, and then go back to the rink. But it was just copious amounts of notes because I was nervous as hell. I didn't want to mess up on Hockey Night. Not that I'm frivolous about any part of my career, but the one program you never want to be frivolous around is Hockey Night.
That is absolutely true. I remember my first day was October, I can't remember the exact day, it was also in Ottawa, it was October 2003. It was a Thursday game, it was Montreal at Ottawa, And I remember in the morning, and this is the Bob Cole driving story that Jeff was referring to. So they played a bit of a practical joke on me on my first day. We were staying at a hotel not far from the rink. They gave us, they were going to drive us in the courtesy shuttle from the hotel, the morning skate. It was me, it was Bob Cole, and it was Harry Neal. And Harry Neal was the first guy out, and he was in the car in the back seat waiting. And then I came out, and I went to the back seat with Harry, and Harry said, "No, Elliot, Bob and I like to sit in the back seat and talk about the game. Why don't you sit in the front?" So I said, "Are you sure?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, Bob and I, we love to talk about the game in the back seat." So I moved into the front seat, and I sat there, and a few minutes later, Bob came walking out of the hotel, and he's strolling towards the car, and all of a sudden, he stops, and he looks at me in the front seat, and then he starts again, and he opens up the door, and he says, "Young man, I know you're new here, but I sit in the front seat at Hockey Night in Canada." So Harry was laughing away in the back seat as I was like this tall. I was like, this is already a nightmare of a day. So the rest of the day got without incident, but then, you know, I'll never forget this. It was 7 o'clock, was the start, Eastern time, and my debut, I was gonna interview John Muckler, who was GM of the Ottawa Senators at 7:02. And they were in a contract dispute at that time with Martin Havlat, and I had to interview him about trying to sign Martin Havlat. And I remember, they still had the old theme, the one that a lot of us grew up with. And at 7 o'clock, when that theme hit, and I realized I was about to go on Hockey Night in Canada, I like crapped myself. I absolutely did. I like started sweating, my hand was shaking, I was literally worried that I was not going to be able to speak in 2 minutes.
I'm going to break Hockey Night in Canada.
I'm going to
mess
break
up
it.
The show.
I'm going to ruin the show on my first one right here. And I remember I turned to John Muckler and I said, "This must be the first time the guy interviewing you is more nervous than you are." And John Muckler had seen everything. And he looked at me and he just growled. He goes, "I doubt it." And that got me back down to myself again. Like, John Muckler saved me in that first interview. And I'll never forget that as long as I live.
You know what? And I'm not going to say...
I still think now, like, don't, when I go on the air, don't ruin the show.
Don't mess
it
up.
I still think that. Every week I go on.
You know what?
Don't ruin the show.
You know what Hockey Night in Canada, working at Hockey Night, taught me?
What's that?
How to buy ties. Ever tell you this story?
No.
I'm not going to say who the analyst slash commentator was, but it's someone in our industry who is notorious for, how do we say, squeezing the beaver on the nickel until it squeals. Very cheap. Okay? So I'm doing ringside. It's a Montreal.
I have a guess, but I'm not going to do it publicly.
Don't do it, because you probably know exactly who I'm talking about. So... it's a Saturday night Montreal-San Jose game, and so I get into Montreal. I'm doing the Hockey Night in Canada radio show on Sirius. I get off at 6 o'clock, get over to Porter, catch the one-hour flight into Montreal. I'm at the hotel by 8:30, 9 o'clock. And I walk in, and I see this person on the crew who sort of waves me over. I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to go drop my stuff up upstairs, and I'll come and have a beer with you." Come over, and we start chatting, and we start talking about clothing. Somehow we end up talking about wardrobe, and he says to me, "How many ties do you think I have?" I said, "Oh, geez, I don't know. You've been on TV a long time, budget every year, a few new ties." I said, "I have no idea." He says, "I've got about 600 ties." I said, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, give or take, maybe 500. I don't know, but 500-600 ties."
Already we're dropping by 100.
And he says, "Guess how many I've paid for?" I said, "How many have you paid for?" He says, "Zero." He says, "You should come tie shopping with me sometime." I say, "Sure, but the price is right. I'd love to." He says, "Well, put your beer down. We're going tie shopping right now." So what? So we put our beer down, and we walk over to the front desk. And sure enough, he walks up to the front desk and says, "Hi, excuse me. Yeah, I stayed here a couple of months ago, left a couple of ties up in my room. I'm wondering if there's still..." And sure enough, they'll bring out a basket. The Dukes every time, and they have a bunch of ties. "Oh, yeah, it's these two, one over each shoulder," and he's back to the bar. Says, "I do it at every hotel room I stay at, and I've picked up ties."
I don't know about any of you guys in this crowd, but I would be mortified if I was the subject of that story. Like, you if I knew somebody was telling that story about me, I would be, I don't think I'd be able to walk outside. I would be so embarrassed.
Ties, phone chargers. What's the media price, Elliot? $3.99.
$3.99.
$3.99. That's the way it is.
The greatest thing you ever saw. Greatest thing you were fortunate enough to cover.
I was with you in Beijing, got to see Phelps swim. That was cool. Got to see Usain Bolt run. But the coolest thing I ever saw, and it made me feel like an inferior human being, mm-hmm. was one day, I think I was doing, like, you got all the big shot sports because you're Elliot Friedman, so you're doing, like, the 100 meter. Like, you're doing all the biggies. Yeah. I think I was doing table tennis. Maybe archery.
My first Olympics, I did table tennis.
If you're going to do table tennis, though, table tennis in Beijing was amazing because mm-hmm. Peking University was crammed, 16,000 people. So one day, I'm done around noon, and I'm going over to the Nest to see some of the guys run. And so I file, and I put my little CBC knapsack on, and I'm going over the, I think I might have gone to the pool, I can remember. I was walking through Olympic Village, and I noticed beside me, as I'm sort of clomping along in Beijing, this, I don't know what it was, but it was this creature that was almost like prancing beside me, like I had never seen anyone walk like this. It was Usain Bolt. And if you've ever seen anyone who can walk perfectly, you know what I'm talking about, where every single muscle is in complete harmony and symphony with every other muscle in his body, and it seems as if there's a grace and a strength, and he's got like his headphones on, he's just grooving. And I remember specifically being so embarrassed to walk next to Usain Bolt that I stopped, because I'm just thump, 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 going off, and here's this guy who's this graceful gazelle who's walking beside me. For the first time in my life, I was embarrassed to walk. What about you?
Well, you know, like you mentioned Bolt. That was one of the highlights of my career, no question about it. I was the trackside reporter that year in Beijing. And I will never forget that. When Bolt, because that year Bolt won the 100 and the 200, and he set the world records in both. And I don't know if any of you will remember, but that year he smashed the record in the 100, and in the 200, in all the heats, he stopped running. And there was a big controversy about he wasn't going to try for the world record in the 200. And I remember one day I got to ask him about it. And he talked about how, you know, you don't do that. You slice the onion thin. And the reason is that a lot of people in that sport, they're paid based on appearance fees. And you make more money the more you break the world record. So you don't necessarily want to smash it. So he would go around the bend in the 200 in the heats in the semifinal, and he really was stopping. He was winning so far. So I remember for the 200 meter final, it was at night, and Jeff referred to it, it was called the Bird's Nest, because the stadium actually looked like a bird's nest. It's seat on the outside. It seated 91,000 people. It was a beautiful thing. And so the 200, they start, and you know, people think he's going to win, but nobody's expecting he's going to beat the world record because he's basically said he's not even going to try. Well, so he blows out with a huge lead, and he's killing the field, and he comes around that bend, and all of a sudden people realize Bolt's not stopping. He's going for it. And there's this low murmur, and it's getting louder as the audience is beginning to realize what's happening. Like, he's making the run for it. And all of a sudden, like, they're screaming, they're cheering him on. Like, as a reporter, you're supposed to be objective and impassionate and or dispassionate. But if you didn't have your hair standing up on end when this was going on, you basically had to be, like, dead. So he comes around and he smashes through the finish line, and everybody stares and turns at that clock. And you're waiting to see the letters WR come up, because if it's WR, it's a world record. And when those letters came up, that place went bananas. Like, he went flat down on his back, like he mock fainted, and that place went wild. And then all of a sudden, it was his birthday. Everybody started singing him happy birthday. Like, there's not too many things I'm ever going to see in my life that are going to be more incredible than that. Like, the golden goal in 2010, we didn't do those Olympics. Mm-hmm. I got married that year in September 2009, and we put off our honeymoon. So I went during the Olympics, I went on my honeymoon with my wife to Hawaii, and we came back on the Saturday. And on the Saturday night, I flew to Vancouver to go to the gold medal game on the Sunday. So I think I became the first guy almost to get married, come back from their honeymoon and get divorced and within 24 hours. But like, that was an incredible thing to see Crosby score. But I got to tell you, that bolt thing at the Olympics, that was dynamite.
Did you always want to do this?
Oh, yeah,
was this always your plan? Like young Elliot Friedman playing sports, but one day dreaming about being a sports reporter.
Like I knew at an early age I wasn't going to be a professional athlete. So I love sports. I love the unscripted drama of it. It's one of the last things in the world that we don't know what's going to happen before it happens. I love it. I told the kids this today, but I think the other thing that's really happened is when you're around elite people, and these are elite people, they're elite coaches. Like, if you play one game in the National Hockey League, you are the elite of the elite. It is so hard to get there. I was talking to Corey Locke. I was telling you the other day, Corey Locke is a player. He's from Ontario. He just retired after a 15-year career. He played 5 games in the NHL. He won 2 Calder Cups. He won a championship in Berlin. Like, he played 5 games. To me, that's incredible. But, like, when you're around the elite of the elite, if you don't learn something about what makes you successful or what can make you better, I am so much of a better person and human being because of what I've seen up close. I've been very blessed to live the life I've gotten to live. There's no question about
it. Is there an athlete that you've always wanted to interview, present or previous, that you've never had a chance to? Some you've only admired from afar.
I would love to. I was watching that NBA championship run. I would love to sit down with Kawhi Leonard. And my first question to be him would be like, does anything rattle you? Like, you looked at that guy. That guy was a stone-faced killer. Like, he beat those teams, and he never looked like his blood pressure got high. He never looked like he had a heartbeat more than just calm. Every game, no matter what happened the game before, he was great the next game or he was reset the next game. I would love to ask him, like, what rattles you? What makes you excited? Like, I would love to sit down with that guy and ask him what makes him tick.
Some of the features you used to do for Hockey Night were real good. And
What Jeff is saying is that the quality of my work has really dropped off in recent years.
Specifically on this podcast, but I'm here to carry you, so it's okay, Fridge. You just surf through another contract. The Pavel Datsyuk one that you did, I thought was real interesting. And I remember talking to Brad May, who played with him in Detroit as well, saying how he doesn't let anybody watch his workouts. He doesn't let anybody, it's very private, doesn't want to let anyone know. He just goes away and he comes back and he's all lathered up and we don't know what Pav does. Is he one of the more interesting players that you've ever done a feature about? Like, when I look at like the last 20 years in hockey, we just had this artist float through that not too many people know a whole ton about. But if you ask players, they'll tell you, oh, he couldn't lift up a stick. This guy was a wizard out there. This guy was everything.
Like, he was great. I loved Alfredson. Like, my favorite one was probably Daniel Alfredson. I think he was one of the funniest guys alive. I loved talking to him. Datsyuk, that one was great. We had one on the Canucks and their sleep patterns.
I remember that.
Like,
with Mike Gillis.
Like, they all had to wear the watch. Like, I loved all that stuff. I miss doing that stuff.
I'm doing pretty good with the questions today. I thought I was really good with the kids this afternoon, but I've got a bottle of water in me. I'm in my zenith.
We'll wrap up pretty soon. We'll stick around. We'll take questions. If you actually want to take a picture with either one of us, we'll be happy to do it. This opportunity to come out, like, this is the first time anybody's invited us out to do something like this. I think it's, I'm serious about what I said before. I'm from Toronto. I didn't understand until I got to Hockey Night in Canada how much it meant to come to places like St. John, places I hadn't been before, and represent what it is that we do. Jeff and I are very fortunate in our jobs. It's difficult for me to put it into words how much I appreciate and we appreciate the invitation to come here. Thanks very much for having us. Thanks very much for being here tonight. We know how much hockey means to you and a visit means to you, and we hope we deliver. Like, it's important. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. True. Thanks to Trevor. Thanks to Scott. Do we have? I'm going to ask one more time. We will put it up on social media. But on behalf of our producer, Emil Delich, on behalf of Elliot Friedman, thanks to Trevor Georgie, the entire St. John's Sea Dogs organization, Jeremy Poirier as well. Have a wonderful season. Jeremy, look forward to seeing you this year and in Montreal as well. Thanks for joining us at Rockies. And thanks for downloading and listening to the podcast. And thanks for coming out tonight. We're not going anywhere. We're hanging around. So let's have fun now, guys.